Welcome to The Rift, a radio show about climate change, ecology, politics, and power. My name is Roshan Krishnan, and you're listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM here in East Central Illinois, and streaming all over the world at weft.org. Today is Sunday, May 3rd, 2026, and this is episode 30 of The Rift. If you spent any time listening to previous episodes of this show, you know that the politics of energy and utilities is a recurring theme. I've spoken with guests from Detroit, Michigan, New York City, and South Africa who are all fighting for utility affordability and helping build a vision of democratized, community-owned power. And as always, if you'd like to go back and listen to those episodes or any other episode of the show, just search for The Rift on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcast aggregator of your choosing. But the fight over utilities is only growing in the public eye. Communities are waging struggles over data centers and renewable energy, all while electric rates continue to get more and more unaffordable. According to recent research by the Energy Equity Project, nearly 1 in 10 American households experiences a utility shutoff each year. The situation is especially dire in Alabama, where electric and gas bills have increased around 20% since 2020, and where 1 in 5 families experienced a utility shutoff in 2024. Meanwhile, despite being one of the sunnier states in the country, Alabama's utilities, regulators, and legislators have created a hostile environment for renewable energy. Case in point, solar energy makes up only 6% of the state's energy mix. But Alabama residents have started to fight back. The state's most recent legislative session demonstrated just how hungry Alabamians are for more affordable power, and how far their for-profit utility company, Alabama Power, will go to fight against that. To learn more, I spoke with John Dodd, policy manager at Energy Alabama, a nonprofit advocacy organization focused on promoting affordable and clean energy in the state. After the break, you'll hear our conversation about the utility landscape in Alabama and the legislative battle that Alabama residents are waging for energy affordability. But first, programming on WEFT is brought to you in part by Fire Doll Studio. The Taylor Street Block Party Concert Series. The first event for 2026 is on Saturday, May 16th, with community vendors and live music from Hannah Kitt, Pop Balloon, Sid Kingston, The Write-Ups, Nectar, and Mustard Plug. Schedule and more information is available on Facebook and Instagram at Taylor Street Block Party. Programming on WEFT is also made possible by Tanner Friedman Strategic Communications. Tanner Friedman is a public relations agency with a focus on media relations, crisis communications, and brand messaging. They also possess capabilities in video production, web design, and event promotion. More information on the firm and its work is at tannerfriedman.com. And now, here's my conversation with John Dodd of Energy Alabama. I'm joined now by John Dodd, Policy Manager at Energy Alabama. John, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here today and talk a little bit about what's been going on in the state of Alabama in terms of energy and utility regulation policy.
Great. Yeah, just to kind of set the stage, could you tell me a little about Energy Alabama and what you guys do?
Absolutely. Energy Alabama is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that operates statewide in the state of Alabama. We have two pillars, and those pillars are education and advocacy. We have a group of folks that are on the education side, and I, by chance, am on the advocacy side. And we educate the community and advocate for policies around advancing clean energy, affordable energy, and consumer protection against monopoly utilities in the state of Alabama. And same goes for our education side. They engage with, the common citizen of Alabama while simultaneously hosting education events and speaking events at local schools to talk about what is clean energy.
Cool. Energy and utilities is kind of that's one of my personal interest areas. It's something that I used to work on. In previous episodes of the show, I've talked to advocates around energy justice and public power from Michigan and New York and some of these other states. And of course, everything that you just talked about, those broad goals of achieving affordable, reliable, clean energy, those are all pretty much aligned between everyone who's kind of in this space across the country. But they're, of course, dealing with very distinct, localized economic and social contexts and landscapes that sort of shape their fights and how they move. So what does that landscape look like in Alabama? What kinds of challenges are Alabama residents facing when it comes to energy and utilities?
Yeah, that's a great question. Alabama faces a landscape that's very similar to, other states that are burdened by monopoly utilities that are investor-owned. Alabama households face a high energy burden relative to median income, and especially in rural areas and environmental justice communities like the Black Belt, which is a portion of Alabama. That is kind of, it looks like a belt if you're looking at it on a map, but it's a predominantly black portion of the state of Alabama that has a lot of historical proponents to it, or not proponents, but historical background to it on why it's called the Black Belt. It was, derived as a strip of land. There was a lot of plantations back in when slavery was legal in the South. And, during that time, the reason there were a lot of plantations there is because the soil was black and it was rich and it was easy to plant crops and have success. So that's where a lot of plantations set up. And so historically, now that that is passed, there are still a lot of black communities still in that area. And unfortunately, that area is impoverished and the state doesn't do enough, in my opinion, to promote economic stimulus or, bring jobs to that area. And so communities like that is who really feels the brunt of the energy burden in the state of Alabama. Alabama has a monopoly investor-owned utility that is a sister company of, that is a subsidiary of Southern Company. It's called Alabama Power. They serve 1.5 million Alabamians, so a great majority, a portion of our state. But Alabama currently has the third highest residential monthly energy bill in the United States of America. We're currently ranked fourth in energy usage as well. And that goes back into a lot of the poverty that our state faces. People have old houses. They can't afford to build new ones. And so simultaneously, if they can't afford to build a new house and they may be acquiring or buying an old house, they probably don't have the money to make the renovations needed for weatherization or maybe putting more insulation in the attic or the ceiling to make their home more sustainable in terms of heating and cooling. So a lot of households in Alabama spend a ton of money each year just on simply heating and cooling their homes. So along with that, when it comes to the regulatory framework of the state of Alabama, many states have like a public utility commission. Ours is called the PSC, the Public Service Commission. They have the duty of regulating the utility of the state of Alabama, not just Alabama Power, but also Spire Gas, who provides natural gas to houses that may have a gas line or gas appliances. They also regulate things like transportation, telecommunications, the railroads, multiple other things. But primarily, they are pretty much, elected to be the regulators of Alabama Power in the state of Alabama, which is a big deal. And these individuals are elected in partisan elections. They run in statewide elections, similar to how you would vote for a governor's election or a U.S. Senate election in your state, is how it is in Alabama. Currently, recently there was some policy changed, and we'll get more into that later, that completely changes the framework of how our regulators are chosen and elected. But all that to say is the landscape is pretty wild right now. You have one option unless you live in one of the 13 northern counties in the northernmost part of Alabama that is bordered to Tennessee. That portion is TVA service territory. So they are serviced by the Tennessee Valley Authority. Everyone that lives in that area, as you may know, TVA is a wholesale provider. So no one gets their bill directly from TVA, but TVA does sell wholesale electricity to many municipal electrics up in North Alabama and small rural cooperatives as well, which is, a great example of public power publicly owned power, in some of these rural communities of Alabama. That's pretty much the layout and the landscape of how it is here.
Yeah, that was a really, really thorough explanation. Thanks. I am curious about, people's experiences with Alabama Power. I've lived in Michigan before. I lived in Southeast Michigan, where the investor-owned utility, the monopoly utility there, DTE, is kind of widely despised by most of the public. I've also lived in places like Massachusetts, where the investor-owned utilities there are kind of not even known. It's just like I get my electric bill and I pay it, and that's, I don't really think about that. What sort of place would you say Alabama Power kind of occupies in people's lives?
Well, all I'll say is they're currently hiring a bunch of extra communications and PR reps right now because they're not doing very popular with the citizens of Alabama, and that is mainly because of their prices. We have some of the highest electric rates in the southeastern portion of the United States right now. And you can just tell, by the way that they carry themselves and they talk publicly. And if you ever read their earnings reports through Southern Company, that they have one priority, and it is bringing back profit or increasing their dividends for their shareholders. And that is, that's the complication that we run into when a utility that provides a very important need to people, a lot of people in a state that is impoverished, which is electricity, they're the only option for those people. And simultaneously, they're investor owned. And so more people are starting to click and get it because, in some states, you may get your electricity bill and you may see it and it may be $170. It may be $70, and you may not really think anything of it. You mail them a check or pay online. But in Alabama, we're working with Energy Alabama, we've received messages online, people calling us and reaching out through email or through their telephone and sharing their story about how high their energy bill is, even compared to their usage, where it just doesn't really make sense. People are paying energy bills in the state of Alabama just for electricity in a month that's ranging anywhere from $300 to $800. And that is very unaffordable for people who are already struggling to make it to the end of the month and pay for other things, whether that be rent or a mortgage, groceries for your family, or whatever expenses you may incur. At the end of the month, you're going to have to think about, I got to pay Alabama Power or they're going to disconnect my electricity. And, that would be bad. I may not have heating in a cold month. I may not have cold in a hot month, or I may not be able to cook dinner tonight. And that is, some of the terrible stories that we've heard about in the state of Alabama. That's what energy burden is. That is people choosing to pay their electricity bill instead of paying for their prescription medication. That's people choosing to pay for their electricity bill instead of choosing to, buy a birthday cake for their son or daughter on their birthday. Terrible stories like that. And that's really why the public perception of Alabama Power in the state of Alabama is so bad right now. That's why in this past legislative session that we've had, a majority of the grassroots advocacy that we saw was based around the issue of affordability. And it was people from all over the political spectrum. You saw apolitical folks, liberal, conservative, everybody that you can think of was reaching out to their legislators and demanding, pass some policy that'll relieve some stress on my pocketbook. But it was one issue in affordability specific. It was more than groceries or gas. It was electricity. And that's because our lawmakers and our regulators are able to pass policy in Alabama that directly affects, the price of our electricity.
Yeah, and I would love to get into that conversation, but just before we do, I was curious about something that you mentioned. Obviously, the problem of utility disconnections or shutoffs, as people call them, you know, people can't afford to pay their bill. The power company shuts their power off. That's become an increasing problem across the country. It sounds like it's certainly a problem in Alabama among those who are in energy poverty specifically. Are there any legal protections for people against shutoffs in the state at all?
It's very complex. On paper, technically, yes, you do. But at the end of the day, those protections aren't thorough. So your first protection is you have your Public Service Commission, you have your regulator. If you have been disconnected without reason, or if you feel like you've been disconnected when you shouldn't have been, they have a formal procedure to where you have to file a formal complaint with the Public Service Commission and report that, that disconnection that shouldn't have happened to you. That process can take anywhere from a week to months. So if your power is disconnected in the moment, that's not very helpful whatsoever. But simultaneously, on the other side of things, the utility has done such a good job on their end. I wouldn't call it a good job, but a good job on their end of using regulatory capture for our Public Service Commission by the means of, dark money funneled to our regulators or gifts or, whatever it may be. They have loyalty from their own regulators. And so all that to say is, when people file these formal complaints, whether it's a complaint about, someone accusing of the utility of price gouging or someone accusing the utility of cutting their power off, when they were up to date on their bill or when they still had time to pay off their debt to the power company. A lot of times those complaints go unheard or they're dismissed without, in my opinion, a proper amount of time to look at what the accuser is saying. But simultaneously, aside from the PSC in Alabama, you also have the Attorney General's office. In state code of Alabama, the Attorney General serves as the consumer protector the consumer advocate for the ratepayers in the state of Alabama. So if there's ever an instance to where, the ratepayers have said, hey, we're being done wrong, we have disproportionately way more disconnections than we usually do, or the power company is disconnecting our power during the hottest months of the year, it is typically the job of the Attorney General's office to, open up what other states do that Alabama hasn't done in 40 something years, which is have a rate case hearing or open it up to where there's some sort of litigation to where the Attorney General and their staff, has to have some sort of quasi-judicial meeting between the regulators and the power company to figure it out and fix that issue. But going back to what I said with the Public Service Commission, regulatory capture comes into play there as well, because in the state of Alabama, although it is illegal for the utility to donate money or gifts directly to their own regulators while they're in office or, while they're running as a candidate for the position, there is no stipulation that says that they cannot donate money, gifts, lobby around the Attorney General's office and their staff. So, for example, the current Attorney General of the state of Alabama is Steve Marshall. And if you look up on, public information on the Alabama Secretary of State's website for monetary contributions, he's received a great deal of money from Alabama Power over his long career as a career politician. So there's your two routes right there. But unfortunately, they don't work at the end of the day. So groups like Energy Alabama and other groups around Alabama like GASP, that's why we intervene in dockets all the time. And, in some instances, even have to take the commission themselves into litigation to fix some of these issues. And a lot of times we're not successful, but we're the only people to try for them at the end of the day.
Yeah, I want to come back to something that you mentioned in there, which is that Alabama has not had a public rate case in over 40 years. I think the last one was 1982. I want people listening to understand how unusual that is. This is something that happens in other states almost every year, very, very frequently. And, we can get into talking about exactly how useful a public rate case is and how much impact the public is actually allowed to have. But I think, you know, you were talking about regulatory capture. That seems like a pretty remarkable example of it. And I think that kind of leads us into talking about the legislative session that we touched on. So earlier this month, the governor of Alabama, Kay Ivey, signed into law this bill called the Power to the People Act, which, you know, great title. But it sounds like not everyone is particularly thrilled with the content of that bill. So could you talk a little bit about, you know, what was in the bill now that it's a law, and, you know, why it's been so heavily contested by groups such as Energy Alabama?
Absolutely. The Power to the People Act has been a majority of what I focus my time on for the last 3 months as a registered lobbyist for for Energy Alabama. It started out as a bill, and this is very complex, and I'm going to do my best to describe this situation, because if anybody out there listening does not know anything about the Alabama State Legislature, one thing to take away today is they are very tricky sometimes. So to start off, there was a bill in the Alabama State House, and it started off with a Representative Mac Butler, who made a good faith attempt to fix a lot of these affordability issues that his constituents and millions of other Alabamians were begging the state legislature to fix because the commission was doing nothing about it. And to add details to that, the commission exists through the legislature. So if the legislature passes a law that directs the commission to do something, the commission must comply because that is state code. So he introduced a bill called HB 475. It didn't have a fake populist name on it at first. It was just HB 475, regular bill number. And what his bill aimed to do, after we did some work with it and did some workshop, because originally it had some loose language, what his bill proposed to do was create an actual rate case hearing schedule in the state of Alabama, similar to the state of Georgia's, that rolls on a 3-year basis. And then there's triggers in it. So like if, you know, the Alabama Power's return on equity or their profits, their ROE, if it exceeds the national average of other investor-owned utilities, whatever the national average is at that moment, that would be a example of a trigger for a rate case hearing. But if there are no triggers, you know, you have to have a rate case hearing at least once every 3 years is what that bill would have stipulated. And for those who may not know what that is, that's just an opportunity for the regulators, the ratepayers, and other stakeholders like Energy Alabama, and even the utility, and even elected officials, if they want to be a part of the process, they can be. They all come to the table, and there are the Public Service Commission will be given subpoena power to subpoena members of the utility or whoever they think that they may need to subpoena to answer the questions that they are asking on why bills are so high and why profit margins are so high for the power company year after year while Alabamians continue to struggle to pay it. And it's all under oath. So if you lie or if you mislead, just like you would a testimony in front of a congressional committee in Washington, D.C., you could be held under perjury. So, you know, it's a very serious issue. It's government at the end of the day, and it should be treated seriously. So that's the first part of what that bill introduced. It also had a provision in it that banned political spending from being recovered from ratepayers in the state of Alabama. And it went into great detail, which I was very happy about, to define what political. Because at the end of the day, a lot of people say, oh, political spending, that's just donations to politicians and the salary you pay your lobbyist. But there's a lot more to political spending than just that, because technically both of those are can't be recovered by the ratepayer already. So what that provision would have done about prohibiting certain political expenditures from being recovered from ratepayers is it would have prohibited any instance where Alabama Power would have paid a lot of money for advertising, have paid for PR, any type of payment they pay to a PR firm, any payment that they pay to an external government relations firm, because what a lot of people don't know is, yes, the power company has internal lobbyists, but they also have a whole bunch of external lobbyists that they hire from firms that are dedicated just to lobbying for whoever pays them to do it. And it would also protect the ratepayer from having to pay for the power company's dues into trade associations. And in Alabama, some of the popular ones that the power company is a part of are things like Manufacture Alabama, which is a coalition of industrial manufacturers, and the Business Council of Alabama, which is also a coalition of businesses in Alabama that are very harmful to unions in the state of Alabama. I'll just be honest. They're very harmful. So this was a good bill at first. It had a lot of popularity. There was a lot of Alabamians advocating for the passage of it. Had a lot of bipartisan support. It got workshopped through committee. We could tell that the power company was not a fan of it because they were doing a full court press on getting their lobbyists into people's offices and, counting the votes. And, you know, it's an election year in Alabama, so making sure they made the threats that they needed to make in order to have the votes that they needed. But the grassroots support that we had was so strong that it defeated the power company. The bill passed a House, the House floor vote, 104-0. Oh, wow. It was fully bipartisan. It was unanimous. It was something that I never expected, and we were very glad to see. Well, in comes another bill. It's called SB 360, and this is the original Power to the People Act. So notice HB 475 and then SB 360. So SB means Senate bill. So this bill was originated in the Alabama State Senate. So while the House is having a grand old time actually working to make bills more affordable for Alabamians and also, set up the framework for proper regulation over a monopoly utility, the Senate said, hey, we're going to carry the power company's water, and we're going to come back with a bill that we're going to say lowers cost or maybe puts the power company in check. But all it did in the framework of its language was it changed the way regulators are chosen. So SB 360 proposes an expansion of the commission from three people. Our commission is currently a body of three, place one, place two, and a president. To seven. And so it would reflect our U.S. congressional districts. They would be district-based commissioners, and they would run on district-based elections, which, for the record, this is not something that Energy Alabama would have opposed if they would have phased in the new commissioners through election. So this is where it gets murky. So currently, there is a election happening in the state of Alabama that will happen, primaries in May, general in November, for place one and place two of our current three-body commission. So these candidates are campaigning statewide, and they're going to have their primary in May. What this bill, with the language, hate to ruin the end of the story, but it passed with this language, requires the governor of the state of Alabama to appoint four new commissioners post-primary, but before the general election. So these commissioners are running and gaining support statewide, running on good, issues of holding the power company in check and having rate case hearings. And then the power company sees the writing on the wall and expands the commission, dilutes their power immediately before they're even sworn in. So they were running to be one vote in a body of three. Now they're running to be one vote on a body of seven. And the four additional commissioners that will be appointed by the governor's office. And who takes a lot of money from the power company? The governor's office. So now you're kind of starting to see where regulatory capture comes into play, even at our own state legislature. And so the Power to the People Act, you may be saying, like, why did you even mention HB 475? So this is where it gets crazy. 475 passes the House unanimously. The Power to the People Act, which is the Senate's version, gets introduced. We sound the alarm bells and do the whole Paul Revere thing and say, hey, the power company's coming. This is a power company bill. And the people were not fooled. They saw right through it. They demanded that that bill die immediately. They demanded that their senators, their state senators, do not vote yes on that bill. They don't even let it get out of committee. But 48 hours after it was introduced, what happens? It is passed unanimously through committee. It is passed unanimously through the Senate body. So now we're in an odd predicament. The Senate has their version of SB 360, which is, the Power to the People Act. and the House has their HB 475. Well, now it's time to switch the bills over to the opposite chambers, like the legislative process goes, and, you know, have the Senate approve the House's version and the House approve the Senate's version. But now that both bills are, you know, allegedly dealing with the same issue, they wanted to negotiate and have a compromise, maybe mix the bills together, see what they can do to combine them. And so that week, I'll remember it for the rest of my life, was what we call spring break. And during the legislative session, the legislators will take a week off, you know, usually lines up with the University of Alabama spring break, so they can, you know, go take a spring break with their children. They can have a week off and come back in and, you know, finish up the legislative session, pass the final bills and pass the budget. Over that week of spring break, there were supposed to be negotiations of the author of HB 475 and all the authors of, you know, the Senate leadership of SB 360. And it was supposed to be to where, you know, they come to a real good compromise. You know, this provision can stay as long as this provision can stay. Well, that did not happen. The Senate pretty much bullied the House author, stripped every single bit of HB 475's language out of HB 475 and substituted every single word, like almost verbatim, of SB 360 into HB 475. And that was what they called, you know, a compromise, a gentleman's agreement is what they called it at the end of the day, but that was false. So we come back into session the Monday after spring break, and we have a committee hearing for HB 475 and a Senate hearing committee. The introducing sponsor of SB 360 walks up there and introduces a full substitute of the bill, and the full substitute was SB 360's language and taking out HB 475's language. So now you have a Trojan horse bill. You have a bill still named HB 475, but now it has the language of SB 360, and then they continue to, you know, pound the name of Power to the People Act to give it some extra, you know, populism. So once again, the state legislature, mainly the state Senate, really thought the average Alabamian, their constituents, were stupid. They didn't think that they would, you know, first of all, have the time to see what they actually did to them in terms of the switch. But they didn't think that they would, even if they did notice it, they would realize what actually happened. But that was wrong. They realized it in real time, what was happening. And it was, after that, it was adopted. It was crammed through the House. The original introducing sponsor, Representative Mac Butler of HB 475, voted against his own bill in the end. Something unprecedented and something I've never seen in my short career as a lobbyist in the state of Alabama. And the bill quickly passed, and Governor Kay Ivey at the time was in the hospital due to some respiratory issues. And her first action of getting dismissed from the hospital was signing that bill into law. So that is what we have in the state of Alabama. I know that I just threw a lot. That story was crazy. but I can't accurately summarize it in a concise way without leaving some of those major details out.
Yeah, I mean, that really is, it's a great glimpse into the messiness of the state legislative process, something that I've also been regrettably party to in a different state. But, you know, it's hard to know where to begin afterwards. One thing that I am pretty curious about, obviously the appointment of these new public service commissioners, as you've described, pretty clear attempt to just pack the commission with commissioners favorable towards Alabama Power. But I'm curious what having elected public service commissioners has been like to this point, and whether you feel like it's been kind of a positive or a negative. That's not something that's a given from state to state, right? Like here in Illinois, our public service commissioners are, well, it's the Illinois Commerce Commission, but they're appointed. In a lot of states, they're appointed. And in my experience, having these elections, to some extent, is of course a good thing. You know, you're expanding democratic process to people who can actually vote for these positions. At the same time, yeah, the utilities do tend to throw their weight around in these elections. And like basically any other election, they'll influence it and they will pour money onto one side. And so just kind of curious to hear, you know, what that's been like and what you expect it to be like going forward.
And that's a great question, because that's something I kind of had to figure out and kind of had a battle with in my own head at the very beginning of the session. At the very beginning of the session, there was a great controversy. One could call it a scandal. There was a bill introduced, HB 392, in this bill, and it's on the record. I'm not just saying this as somebody who doesn't really like the power company. This bill came from the power company. There was a bill to completely take away the democratic process of voting for our regulators in the state of Alabama and making it appointments only. And the reason I know this came from the power company is, as the session was beginning, I got a call from the lobbyist of Alabama Power. And I guess it's because of my adolescence. I'm 26. I'm young for a lobbyist in the state of Alabama. And simultaneously, this is my second session lobbying, so they may have, thought I was a little dumb. And he tried to market it to me to carry the bill for them and say that, this is a legislative victory for you guys. We're going to let y'all have this. We can even oppose it publicly to make it look like we're fighting, but I can't be seen around it, this and that. It was very sleazy and even kind of threatened me, we don't want to see any tweets, like that. We're going to take that as a fight if we see, you guys tweeting about it. I don't know why he kept saying that. You can look up there's audio of that conversation if anybody listening wants to just like look up Alabama Power lobbyist resigns, because he did have to resign in the end, because what he did was very unethical, and it was in my opinion, I'm not a lawyer, but I would say that violates the Ethics Commission rules of the state of Alabama. But I say all that to say is that situation is what started me questioning, what are the proponents of us continuing to have an elected commission? Because when we were fighting that bill in committee, which thank God it died in its house of origin, when we were fighting that bill in committee, a lot of the legislators that were kind of carrying water for the power company would pose that question to us when we would speak at public hearings. You guys are advocates for, better regulations in the state of Alabama. And you're saying that the incumbents aren't doing a great job and they haven't been doing a great job for many, many, many years. But yet here you are saying you want it to stay an elected process. And it made me think to myself, I'm like, that's a good point. I should look up like what all different states are elected, what all states are appointed. I noticed a trend across the United States of the 10 states that still have elected commissions. In those 10 states, there is one sole predominant IOU, investor-owned utility in that state. There are other states that have appointed commissions that do have IOUs in them, but typically there's at least a little bit of competition in their electric market. But simultaneously, going back to the regulatory capture portion of it, in that bill, there were no prohibitions on the power company donating contributions to the elected officials that would be granted the authority to appoint the commissioners every time their terms were up. So that being said, I was being fed a bill to carry for the power company for some ungodly reason that would pretty much just grant them legal authority to pay for whoever they want their regulators to be in the future. And so that left a bad taste in our mouth. And simultaneously, all over the political spectrum, once again, left, right, middle, the citizens of Alabama were pissed about it. They want to vote on their regulators. And we are noticing something in the state of Alabama that hasn't happened in my lifetime. And that is a great awakening of utility politics in the state of Alabama. And I'm not saying it's like a partisan awakening. It's just a great awakening around, it's not the left versus the right now for this specific policy issue. It is the rich versus the poor. And they're realizing that. And they're realizing the rich is the utility, that CEO is making millions of dollars every year, and the parent company is making billions of dollars every year while they're struggling to keep their lights on. So they want to vote for their regulators now, because in the past, it's no secret that Alabama's regulatory elections have not been popular. We've had incumbents who've done terrible jobs in the past that have ran unopposed multiple cycles in a row. And that's embarrassing. Low voter turnout for these elections. But this year, we had more candidates than ever qualify, or not, excuse me, that not ever, but more candidates in the last probably at least 20 years qualify to run for public service commission in the state of Alabama on both sides of the political aisle, which is insane because the power company never primaries or challenges their guys in the office. They never challenge their own incumbents. And that the qualifying happened before that bill came up. So we knew it was a direct response of Southern companies seeing what is written on the wall. They watched it happen in Georgia last year. They watched two of their incumbent commissioners embarrassingly lose after plugging millions and millions of dollars into their campaigns because the people of Georgia were fed up. You know, you had lifelong Republicans in the state of Georgia voting for two Democratic public service commissioners, not because they were like, oh, I'm a Democrat now. It's like, I'm pissed off. You know, just because this guy has an R beside his name doesn't mean he, you know, is actually there to protect me. At the end of the day, he's there to protect the profit of the shareholder of Southern Company. So that's what Alabama Power saw. That's why they introduced HB 392. And honestly, that's kind of why they introduced the Power of the People Act as well. They know that the people of Alabama aren't asleep anymore when it comes to utility politics, and they're ready to vote for some new commissioners.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I think it kind of leads into something that I was going to ask about, which is that, you know, you've spoken about how the party lines have become pretty blurred on this subject of affordability, which I think is really interesting. They tend to not be that way at the federal level. And it does make me curious about, you know, the other piece of this, which is clean energy. And that's something that Republicans tend to be very hostile towards. And I'm curious how that goes in Alabama, which is, of course, a Republican-controlled state. You know, efforts towards clean energy, which of course, typically overlap with affordability. It's something that solar energy can help out with, community solar, residential solar, things like that. What has that looked like in the state?
Yeah, well, that is something that I had a hard time with when I started this job. Although that I thought in my heart and in my brain that the advancement of clean energy in Alabama wouldn't be a partisan issue. I was so brutally wrong. It was at first very much, especially the way I was proposing it. I have, you know, partnered with groups over the, you know, throughout the United States that are conservatives, that are proponents of clean energy. One in particular that I'll give a shout out to is the Conservative Energy Network. They're a group of conservatives that run groups all over the United States of America to try to get, you know, local governments and even state governments to overturn pieces of legislation that may have been passed to put moratoriums on solar or even wind energy. So I have, you know, worked with them to try to put a conservative lens on why should we promote clean energy in Alabama outside of the fact that our world, our earth is dying, and where, you know, the impending doom of climate change is coming, because they don't want to hear that. Yeah. And that turns them off. And so when you pose it as a property rights issue for farmers, when you pose it as an economic issue for communities that are struggling, and, you know, maybe a community in their district that's struggling to keep a rural hospital open or to keep a school open, and also when you pose it as a national security issue, because you have more energy on your grid, you know, utilizing the all of the above strategy of clean energy and renewable energy, you're going to have stronger national security. At the end of the day, you're going to be less vulnerable to, you know, things like cyber or EMP attacks from other countries, you know, if that hypothetically happened in the future. So it all boils down to finding your champion is what I say. I never, you know, target a D or an R specifically in the state of Alabama. I just target whoever's willing to go to work. Like in this past session, who introduced HB 475 that I was telling y'all about, that was a great piece of legislation and would have been monumental if it passed with its own, its original language. He was a very hard right Republican, not somebody that you would expect to introduce a bill like he did. And a majority, I'm going to choose my words with this because not all of them, but there are a lot of elected Democrats in the state of Alabama who are, receiving a lot of monetary contributions from the power company. And when you think of it, it kind of makes sense. It's not ethical at the end of the day. This isn't excusing it, but this is giving reason to why they do. When you're in the state of Alabama that has had a polarized political climate for ever since 2014, we've been a Republican controlled state. Nobody's really donating a ton of money to Democrats, whether you're in the state house or the state senate. But there's one corporation with a whole bunch of money, and their money does not discriminate, RRD, that's willing to give it out to anybody. And so they give it to the Democrats that have been there for a long time. So, at the end of the day, a lot of the newcomer Republicans that get elected, especially to the state house, they're very rambunctious. They're very willing to punch up. Those are the type of wildcats that, you find yourself working with. So that's been interesting to me. It differs very much, like you said, from national politics, because in national politics, it's almost black and white with Democrats and Republicans and when it comes to clean and renewable energy. But in the state of Alabama, you have your champions everywhere. And the biggest thing that I like to talk about, too, is we're still doing our best to advance solar in the state of Alabama. We have a lot of restrictions around solar. One thing in particular is Alabama Power in 2022 was able to convince the Public Service Commission to approve a filing that they filed, which was a request to have an integrated cost fee or a connect to the grid fee if you're using residential solar. So if you wanted to use rooftop solar or put an array in your front yard or your backyard, or put it in a field in your farm, if you're a farmer, you have to not only pay a fee of $5.41 per kilowatt hour that you generate back to the Alabama Power, but the net metering process of you selling that energy, that excess energy back to the grid that a lot of people, make some passive income on. Alabama Power cut the price on which they pay for that excess energy in half. So we offer the lowest rate in the United States for net metering if you are generating your own power at home through solar panels. And we have posed that as a property rights issue. If you're a landowner in the state of Alabama, if you're a farmer in the state of Alabama, because Alabama loves its farmers, our farmers are our backbone, you should be able to do whatever the hell you want with your land. You should be able to have solar on it if you want to. You should be able to even lease your land to solar developers if you want to, because times are tough, and the cattle industry isn't good year round. So there are a lot of farmers struggling who would, like to do something like that right now, but they can't because the utility has such a stronghold on the advancement of clean and renewable energy here. But all that to say is posing the issue like that instead of just a climate change issue, which, all the issues I have raised are just as important as the other. That is what resonates with conservatives the most. And that's what makes it easier to get through to them and help them see the other side.
Yeah, that's super interesting. We've kind of taken up more time than I thought because this has been such a rich discussion. You've been giving such great answers.
Sorry for rambling.
No. But I'm curious, as we sort of get close to wrapping up here, what's your vision for a just energy future in Alabama? And if I might be bold enough to combine a couple of my questions here at the end, How might that interact with the portion of the state that is served by the TVA and by municipal and rural electric co-ops? I know we haven't talked about that a whole lot because there's so much to talk about with Alabama Power. But what are the things that you feel like can help improve energy justice for all of the residents of the state?
Absolutely. And that's a question that I think I could write a book about. But off the top of my head, some of the most important things are and go into what you're saying about rural co-ops and munis. This may just be me. This may not be an official Energy Alabama position, but I would love to see the expansion of publicly owned power in the state of Alabama. I think that when you are providing a need or a necessity, especially in a state like Alabama that has the economic, you know, setup that we currently have, which is not great, which our median income is below the poverty line, I think that locally owned power is the best option. I think it's the best option to advance clean energy. I think it's the best option to keep big corporations from price gouging people who need to, you know, cool and heat their homes. So I would love to see the expansion of that. I would love to see, you know, the predominant utility of the state of Alabama actually acknowledge the submissions they get when they put out RFPs, requests for proposals, on renewable projects, because they put them out all the time and developers reach out with great ideas and they have all the finances in line and they have all the materials in line to make it happen, but they get denied every time. And I would also love to see the advancement of residential solar in the state of Alabama, like going back to the solar tax. You know, I think that if we can do it up in North Alabama and TVA and their grid isn't falling apart, then we should be able to do it in Central and South Alabama as well. You know, I think that would not only relieve have some economic relief to the ratepayer of Alabama, because they're going to be able to generate some of their own power, but it would also help with some of the air quality that we have in Alabama, because we rely on a ton of coal and natural gas still, and it's absolutely destroying our beautiful state at the end of the day. I mean, we are a state of rivers. We have a lot of rivers. We have a lot of national forests. We're a beautiful state, and every day I see something else about how somebody has, you know, gone into noncompliance with FERC or the EPA because they're dumping coal ash or they're dumping mercury into rivers that not only do we drink and swim in, but we catch fish out of, we eat, we kayak in. I mean, this is our lives, and we're letting a corporation ruin it because we gave them control to the grid for some reason. So I would love to see a little bit of competition in the state. I mean, not too much, but I would love to see some. But I would love to see some more advancements of locally owned power.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that Illinois, and especially Central and Southern Illinois, where I'm at, and Alabama have in common is getting coal ash dumped in our rivers. So I'm right there with you, but. Yeah, I think that's kind of all I've got for you. I know we got to wrap up here soon. Is there anything that you'd like to plug, you know, any future work that you're doing or that Energy Alabama is doing that people should be aware of?
Well, we just finished up a legislative session, so nothing too crazy going on right now. We're just in the off season, getting ready for the next one and doing some local work. But simultaneously, if you want to learn more about us or get involved even, please go on over to energyalabama.org. Follow us on any social media or even on TikTok. We do a lot of our advocacy work on there. We're a membership-based organization, and that's what keeps us afloat. So if you want to join as a member for as little as $5 a month, or excuse me, $5 a year, you can do that as well. If not, that's perfectly fine too. But we love to meet new people. We love to hear what's going on in other states. So feel free to reach out to us. And just thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about everything that we've been working on in the state of Alabama today.
Of course. Well, it was great to learn so much more about it. I really appreciate your time. John Dodd, Policy Manager at Energy Alabama. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with John Dodd, Policy Manager at Energy Alabama. Thanks once again to John for taking the time to speak with me and to share his deep knowledge of the politics of energy and utilities in the state of Alabama. You know, there's so much fascinating stuff that John shared with me in that conversation, but what really stuck with me the most is the way he described Alabama residents' growing awareness of the fight for affordable energy. You know, he called it a great awakening. I don't think that's limited to Alabama. I think the people all over the country are starting to realize how crazy it is that this basic utility that we all need is entrusted to these for-profit companies that wield such incredible political power over our institutions, especially now with, you know, as I mentioned before at the top of this show, the way that rates are increasing so much, affordability is becoming more of a concern. You know, more and more people are seeking something different and thinking about alternatives, and it feels more important than ever to be thinking and be having those conversations across state lines and learning from people like John who, you know, despite very difficult circumstances, continue to fight the good fight. So that's today's show. That's all I got for you. As always, thank you so much for listening to The Rift on WEFT 90.1 FM Community Radio from Champaign, Illinois. You can listen to recordings of The Rift on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. The recording of this episode will be up later this evening. Up next on WEFT, we got some tunes just for the couple minutes before 4 p.m., and then at the top of the hour is On the Move with Herbert Burnett. The next episode of The Rift will be on May 24th, and until then, stay safe out there.
I've been